Welcome to Blooming Profits, a podcast by YouTuber Bear Flower Farm, where we talk about all topics related to running a profitable and sustainable flower farm. I'm your host, Jessie, and in each episode, we'll be joined by fellow flower farmers who are eager to share their insights, experiences, and tips for success. All of our interviews are recorded for YouTube, and we encourage you to check out the Bear Flower Farm YouTube channel for visuals and even more beneficial content. You can find the link in the show notes. Hi, Lenny. Thank you so much for making the time to join me today to talk about how we can set more flower farms up for success. I feel like that a lot of people know who you are, especially within the past quarter when you've launched this new book that I refer to quite often. I've got like bookmarks in here. But for those of you who don't know who you are, can you give a bit of an introduction about yourself?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you for having me, Jessie. It's great to be here. This winter, I was deep in like book promotion and conferences and flying over all over the place, speaking at conferences and on podcasts. And that was so wonderful and such a privilege, but it was also very exhausting. And now the past few months, I've been able to sort of chill out and get back to work as normal. So it's great to be doing an interview after like being a bit refreshed. But yeah, so I've been farming since 2011, when I moved out to California to do the farm and garden program at UC Santa Cruz. And then I worked there and then started running a vegetable farm where I was training people how to farm. So I really got into farming to teach people how to farm. I had farmed when I was younger. I worked in refugee resettlement and social work after that. And I realized I needed to kind of get back to the land. So I got into farming with the lens of how can I improve my skills so that I can teach them and make my contribution to the world this way? And as you know, as the story goes, a few years into farming, I was like, screw vegetables. Flowers are the main event here. And flowers just really took over for me. And so I started my own farm around 2014, started it on the side of running my other farm and then running another farm. It was not mine. It was a nonprofit. And then I've been doing it ever since and moved from California to Oregon about a year and a half ago. So moved my farm up here. And then really the past couple of years have been diving deeper and deeper into education and consulting, but also teaching and writing. So obviously I spent the bulk of 2 years writing that book and then have finally launched my educational business, Flower Farming for Profit, which, you know, I've been teaching farmers for years, but this was the way to formally separate it out from my farm and to say, okay, like I'm an educator as much as I am a farmer. So I'm really split between both worlds right now. Long answer, long introduction.
No, it's a great answer. I think it sets you up perfectly. And I want to dive a bit into each of those two parts because you had a lot of experience on the flower farming side, especially both doing retail and weddings. So I definitely want to dig into that. And then later on, I do also want to talk about just teaching flower farms to be more successful, whether or not they are just starting out or they've got a couple of years under their belt. So let's start first with your farming experience in Sonoma. Sonoma is a very specific market, we'll call it. I would say that it's obviously driven by tourism. There's event stuff. And yet one of your biggest sales outlet was actually a farm stand, which I thought was really interesting. Could you talk a little bit about the evolution of your Sonoma farm and like how you started out?
Yeah, absolutely. So I moved up to Sonoma County from Santa Cruz in order to start running that vegetable farm I talked about, and then ended up staying for 10 years. And that's where I built my farm. So I was in West Sonoma County. You know, it is sort of wine country, but I was closer to the coast. So it's pretty affluent, but you wouldn't know it all the time. But, you know, the cost of living is so high that I eventually had to move because I couldn't afford to buy land there. I was leasing land. But I started out selling wholesale pretty much, which is funny because that's not necessarily what I recommend. But I feel that most flower farmers getting into it today are starting with it as a hobby and then transitioning it into a career, whereas I was already a career farmer. I've never said that before, career farmer. So I knew how to farm, I knew how to grow flowers. And in fact, I was already selling flowers wholesale through the farm I was managing. So I, you know, that farm was always, it was called Petaluma Bounty. It's a wonderful operation. And it, you know, it grows vegetables, and then it also grew some flowers, but I expanded the flower production once I found my passion in flowers and started opening up wholesale accounts with a few local florists. And I started like interning with those florists, or one in particular, to learn more floristry skills and to get behind the scenes of the business. And so then when I transitioned to starting B-Side and then left my other job, it was really natural for me to take over those accounts, because the farm I had been running was like, okay, enough of this, like selling flowers wholesale. We're a vegetable farm for low-income families. That's what we do. Why are we growing so many flowers? So it's not like I swooped in and took the accounts. It just made sense for me to take that piece with me, sort of. So I had set up those relationships and I was selling wholesale, which is sort of ridiculous in California, because I've always been a small farm. I've always been under 1 acre. I've leased more land than that. And I started to expand at one point, which we can talk about later. But I always stayed pretty small. And so in California, you're competing with huge farms. It's, you know, like the salad basket of the world or whatever, but it's also like the flower bowl of the US, you know, like the big, most of the big flower production farms in the US are in California. So here I was, this tiny dinky farm selling flowers wholesale to these florists who could buy flowers for so much cheaper because they could buy them from these huge farms with much lower costs of production who could afford to sell their flowers for cheaper. So it took me a number of years to realize, like, this isn't a great business model, you know? And so the farm stand started as something pretty small. It was really beautiful. It was a beautiful stand. My father-in-law built it for me. It was in one of my old field locations, which was sort of off the beaten path. But with time, I started selling more and more flowers there, you know, but it started small, like a few bouquets on a Saturday. And then the following weekend, I'd be open Saturday and Sunday and maybe make a couple $100. And then I started staying open 24/7. And eventually I moved my field, because again, I was leasing fields. And I, at one point, I was leasing 3 different fields in 3 different towns, which is like wild and inefficient. And I moved the farm stand to a location that wasn't actually at my other field. It was down the street from it, because my new field was at my house, and that wasn't going to be a great location for the farm stand, just with my neighbors and sort of being off the beaten path again. So I looked for a location that would be great for a farm stand, found this couple who were interested in leasing essentially like their front porch to me, sort of. It wasn't a built porch. It was just like an area in front of their house with a covering. And it was in the deep shade, and it was on a really busy road that wouldn't look like an idyllic place to have a farm stand. But the road is actually cut off from the 101 out to like the coast. So it's not like it has like beachy vibes or anything, but I knew that half of the people traveling down that road were like on day trips from San Francisco or something, and the other half were locals. And so I was like, there's so many cars going by. People with money are driving by here too. How can I make use of this? You know, so I built the farm stand there, and we just started putting in a lot of effort into building it up as one of our main outlets, and then in fact, my biggest outlet. And it's so funny because like, over the course of about, you know, almost 10 years having my farm in Sonoma County, I sold every which way. I sold through complicated wholesale systems, to wholesalers, to grocery, to florists, to wedding clients, you know, everything. But this farm stand, this self-serve honor system, open 24/7 farm stand, ended up being by far my most profitable and enjoyable sales outlet.
That is quite the journey to get to the farm stand. But there was one thing that you said earlier, which is that you started out wholesale and started realizing that that wasn't a great idea. I guess the point of that, though, is that people were still buying your flowers despite being in such a competitive state. And I know you talk about this in the book, which is just you can cut up an acre many different ways in terms of how you sell it, but one might be more profitable than the other. And it sounds like that it kind of took you a few years to get to that realization that I could be growing the same amount of flowers, but just changing the outlet will make a significant impact on profitability. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, most of the farmers around me were also selling wholesale. We all sort of started at the same time. And so it was a competitive or crowded marketplace, whatever you want to say. I mean, when people say they're in a competitive marketplace, I'm like,
are you?
Okay. Are there 5 farms right around you growing exactly the same thing? Because that's the environment I was in. But, you know, I was sort of one of the first, not like, there were definitely some farms who had been at it longer. There's one farm in particular, cannot think of the name right now, but Dragonfly, they've been around forever. And I know they used to coach like Erin Benzicane when she was starting Floret. They like, you know, she went there to ask them questions. They've been around forever. But other than them and maybe a few others, a bunch of us were just getting started around the same time. So I look back now and see how there's even more farms in that area that have popped up. And it's funny because, you know, we'll later talk about me now being the new kid in town in Portland and being like the new kid on the scene trying to sell flowers in a crowded market. But then in Sonoma County, I was among this group of this like new wave of small flower farms. And we started banding together because we naturally just wanted to work with each other. A lot of us are sort of around the same age. You know, so, my friend Hedda Broerstorm and Danielle Strawn, too, they started the North Bay Flower Collective. And we started our meetings, I think in 2014, maybe 2015, and started banding together. And we were sort of an early version of like a collective. I say early, of course, you know, these things are like much older than any of us, but in this new wave of farming or this post-postmodern era, whatever it is. So we used to get so many emails back in the day, like, I'm starting a collective. Do you have any resources? Can you share this with me? And this was, you know, now, of course, there's so many collectives and they've moved so far beyond what we were doing because we were just trying to figure it out. A lot of us were selling flowers locally, but then also to San Francisco, which was about an hour and a half away. And so we were like, okay, we're all making these deliveries to all these different florists. How can we band together and do a better job? And so my friend Nicole, who has a business called California Sister, actually ended up starting the sales outlet for the collective as a business. And so we never formally incorporated as a collaborative or a collective or anything, a co-op rather. We just sold together through this outlet. And so anyways, you know, yes, everyone was, but to answer your question, I could sell every stem, absolutely. Because I grew great flowers, because I made great connections, and I put in the extra work to like get to know all these customers, but it wasn't paying the bills. I mean, and I didn't know that. It took me a few years to look around and be like, wait, this isn't adding up. And if I keep doing the same thing, this is never going to add up. Because no one thinks that way when they start farming. And I think this is what you're interested in talking about today, too. Like, we're, you know, why do farms struggle so much? I mean, there's so many reasons. It's such an uphill battle, farming is.
It's the hardest profession. I think we're all crazy for choosing it, right? It's the most unscalable profession out there. Yeah,
absolutely. We're up against so many challenges. But, you know, I was in this, like, it was lonely work, but I also did have this cohort of people sort of around me. And then, you know, being really active on the board of the ASCFG for so many years, I had that community as well. But my local community, we were all just like heads down doing our work, growing so many flowers, driving all over the place to get them sold. And then not noticing that like we weren't even remotely thinking about saving for retirement. And we were all in our 30s, some of them in their 20s. It's not like we came from lucrative careers and then started doing this as a side hustle. These were our careers. I didn't have any safety net, you know? And so it just started to feel like crazy. Like, why, you know, I'm working so hard. I'm getting so burned out and I don't have a plan forward. If someone were to have asked me my 5-year plan, I could have cobbled something together, but I wasn't able to say like, oh, well, this year I was able to net 50 grand, but in 5 years, I can see my path towards netting 100 grand and therefore being able to max out my IRA every year and actually pay for my health insurance or actually save for a rainy day. And, you know, all those things. I was just sort of like growing flowers and selling them and growing flowers for selling them and barely scraping by. Yet here I was one of the like successful farmers around, you know? So that's when I started to shift and started to say, how can I do a better job at this? There must be a better way. And I started to take business classes and read more books and sort of put on my blinders and be like, what can I do to work a more realistic schedule and put more money in my pocket at the end of the day so I can keep doing what I love?
Looking for a reliable focal that sells well at farmers markets and can be grown throughout the entire growing season? Consider lilies.
But the problem is finding them in affordable small quantities, so I'm here to plug that gap for the smaller scale grower. I'm offering lily bulbs in 25 and 50 unit increments throughout the entire growing season on bareflowerfarm.com, or you can check the show notes for a direct link. Now back to the show.
So when you shifted over to, we'll call it retail through your farm stand, for, let's just say that you were able to sell a stem for $1 wholesale, what were you able to fetch equivalent wise at the farm stand?
Yeah, great question. I was hyper vigilant in my farm stand of marking things up 3 times from their wholesale value. And this allowed me to also sell what I was growing and mark it up 3 times, but also buy in flowers from other farms when I needed to for my farm stand. You know, I was used to buying in flowers for weddings anyways. I started out just using my own flowers, but then once I started trying to compete with sort of San Francisco florists and do these fancier weddings, I wanted to buy in the, like, you know, fancy clematis I didn't grow at the time, or the garden roses that I didn't have in a certain color, whatever. So I enjoyed buying flowers from other farms, which was easy for me being in the San Francisco Bay Area because there were so many great sustainable farms I could buy from, and the San Francisco Flower Mart too. But so I was totally unabashed in buying flowers from other farms. And I think some new farmer florists are sort of feel like some shame in that or something, but I don't think you have to at all. You know, it allowed me such great flexibility in my crop plan and in my weekly schedule to, like, buy flowers if I needed them, because I knew that I could sell everything I was growing. And if it wasn't being sold to that wedding client that weekend because they had a purple wedding or whatever, I would just sell my flowers through another outlet. So anyways, all to say, having that 3 times markup allowed me to buy in when I needed to. And then I would showcase those flowers at the farm stand and be like, this week's flowers are B-sides, but also full blooms, and also Jolie blooms and design, and also front porches flowers, whatever. You know, it was probably 70% my own flowers. So I marked up 3 times, and that allowed me through the years. And of course, I didn't do this the first year. The first year with the farm stand, I was just like doing what I could, you know, but then I really started to put this system in place where I, by the way, also, I have a resource for your viewers on some tips for building a really successful farm stand. So I'll give you the link for that and people can download that. Cause I, you know, it's, none of it is rocket science, but it's like very specific things that you can do to watch your bottom line every day and to really have higher goals for your farm stand than I think a lot of people start out with. So I marked up 3 times by specifically focusing on my crop plan and, like, what flowers would not necessarily have high perceived value in of themselves, but what flowers would work together in a bouquet to give that high perceived value to the customer while keeping my costs down, using sort of as few stems as possible and being able to mark up as much as possible, well, with the client still feeling like they were getting a good deal and me knowing that I was efficient. So I started, you know, moving away from growing things that wouldn't really add value to a bouquet. Like things like Geum or Columbine, like flowers that I love, but that you probably need a lot of them to make an impact in a market style bouquet. They kind of went the wayside for me. And then garden roses, which I loved, but they weren't necessarily a great farm stand flower. And I grew a lot of them. We're actually planting them this week on my new farm as I speak, because I can't get away from them. I love them. But everyone in Sonoma County grew beautiful roses in their backyard. So, like, they didn't want to buy my garden roses. So it was fine tuning the crop plan over the years, sticking to that 3x markup, really improving my design skills and my efficiency at the same time so that I could make these beautiful bouquets that were, like, as soft and romantic as wedding bouquets would be. Those, they were elevated color schemes, but we made them so quickly and efficiently, usually like 30 seconds making a bouquet and wrapping it, that it was just a really efficient process. So we knew that, you know, the marking the flowers up 3 times from their wholesale price, that, like, delta in there, as long as we, which is the profit, right? Somewhere in here. Like, as long as we were making sure our costs were a small percentage of that, the rest of it was profit. And so that was how I was able to bring in like 125 grand through the farm stand in most years during my last few years there, and profit a big portion of that and work a normal schedule, like work almost like a 9 to 5, you know, rather than 80 hours a week like I was working for so many years.
How much were you selling your bouquets for at the farm stand?
Yeah, usually $30 or $35. So I actually went back and forth. You know, Oregon here, we don't have sales tax. In California, it's a little like muddy, the waters about if you need to include a sales tax on your farm grown product. And I couldn't, so I, for most of the time I was attaching a sales tax to that. So if it was a $35 bouquet, you know, $4 of that or whatever, was that like 9.5% sales tax, which wasn't, of course, didn't go in my pocket. And I stopped treating it like it was going in my pocket. Anyways, just there's different, you know, I could have like proven that I didn't have to pay sales tax, but I wasn't selling the flowers on my own property. And some of them were in fact flowers I had bought in. So I did continue to pay sales tax. If I was still there, I probably would look into that further. But so usually $30 or $35, let's call it a $30 bouquet. So often that had 10 stems in it. And I would know that like, yeah, you know, and it depending on the flower and depending on the time of the season. And I was definitely one of the most expensive people in town. And there were people who would come to my stand, stop, decide it was too expensive and leave for sure. Like, and I'm sure I had some nasty comments and some nasty looks, but I had way, way, way more sales than I did nasty comments. And it was, you know, like it was, and they were beautiful and I did want to provide value and I wasn't trying to pull a fast one on anyone. I'm just saying that like, I never tried to compete on price. You know, I was okay with being one of the more expensive people.
Yeah. Cause I think a lot of people who hear this are going to say, there's no way I can sell a $30 bouquet at my farm stand. And I'm sure that a bit of your florist background in terms of design experience definitely elevated the perceived value. I guess the question is, do you feel like that there were other things that you did? Because I saw in the photos in the book that your farm stand looked amazing. It was like a destination, right? Like you Yes. almost wanted to go just to see the farm stand, not even just buy flowers. So do you feel like Yeah. that also contributed to your ability to market up?
Absolutely. And let's talk about that. And I also want to mention too that, you know, once I started seeing other people's farm stands, I remember once I finally got to Sunny Meadows in Ohio, which like they're so wonderful. You know, everyone knows Sunny Meadows, but it's funny. They're like younger than me, yet they're mentors of mine. They're just so wonderful and have helped me over the years. And I've brought them on to speak on specific topics at specific conferences about this business stuff. I mean, they've been speaking at conferences long before I started farming, but I love collaborating with them because they have so much to teach and they're such great teachers. But all to say, I went to their farm stand and they were selling $30 bouquets too. And they're in Ohio. You know what I mean? Like once you sort of build your brand and your reputation, $30 isn't necessarily... People Crazy. Will spend $30 on flowers. That's what I'm trying to say. And their $30 bouquets were bigger than mine, for sure. But people were still spending the same amount of money. So I really did try to create a little destination. And it's not what you would think. Like, it didn't have a picnic table. That's what I always suggest to people when they're building their farm stand. I'm like, make it a destination. Have a picnic table. This didn't have that. This was like a very busy road. You would pass the farm stand without even thinking about it. And without knowing it was there, rather. But once you came inside and like took a minute, I had these security cameras that we eventually got installed, and I would watch the footage and I would watch people walk in, and they would say like audibly, you know, usually it was a couple, and they'd be like, oh, then they take a step further in and go, oh, you know, like these are beautiful flowers. And I made it this perfect size where if I had a ton of flowers, I could fit them. Or if it was Mother's Day or something, I could fit a ton of flowers. But if I didn't, if times were lean, or if I didn't have many flowers, or if it was a Tuesday in July and I knew many people weren't going to stop, I could still make the stand look beautiful with just a few buckets of flowers. So it wasn't too big that it looked empty ever. And I found a way to like use plants and use dried flowers to make it look beautiful and have a good experience for people no matter what day. And we really made sure it was always looking good. And that often meant stopping in a few times a day. But you know, it was partly reputation. I had been, you know, my farm had been around for like 10 years or 8 years at the point the stand started doing well, maybe 7 years, I don't know. And so people knew of me. And then the branding too, I tried to do everything in the stand to like elevate the aesthetic, to translate to people's minds like, oh, these are fancy flowers, you know, like beautiful metal buckets and chalkboard, little chalkboard signs with like, just like that elevated aesthetic, whatever I could do to like indicate to people, this is sort of a luxury experience. You're treating yourself by being here. I also did really careful tracking of what was selling and who was stopping. So I had a clipboard with like a sign out sheet. And it sounds silly, but it's not because it worked. Over the years, I really refined the exact information I was looking to get from people while they were checking out. And so, you know, I learned that if I asked too many questions on this like piece of paper on this sign out sheet, that people wouldn't answer it. But what was the most amount of information I could get from people that they would fill out? And so I think it ended up with just like name, email address. I think I stopped asking, what did you buy? Although I tried to gather that data over the years, but people didn't always fill it out. So I was like, whatever, as long as they paid me the right amount in Venmo or in cash. And then email address. And I said, please write legibly, because the biggest problem was like taking the clipboard home later and not being able to read the email addresses. But I did an example, like, I think I made some joke about like, don't use your serial killer handwriting. Here's an example of that. Like, here's an example of what you should just like, I made them laugh to make sure that they wrote clearly. And then I asked, is it your first time here? And that was so important for me. You know what? I think I did keep asking them what they bought, because I used the data to show me in a given week, what percentage of people were stopping for the first time and what percentage of people were repeat customers. And what were they buying more of? Like, what were the repeat customers buying more of versus the new people? And I don't remember off the top of my head, but I was able to see like, okay, you know, on Saturdays, we know that of course it's mostly tourists, and maybe Tuesdays it's mostly locals. Like, that seems kind of obvious, but I could shift the offerings on those days in order to make the most sense of it. And I also could like track customer behavior. And I started putting up more road signs to get people to stop earlier, because I would get so many notes of people being like, I've driven by this for a year and I finally stopped. And I was like, okay, how can I get them to stop like the second time they drive by? So I made more and more signs, and I made them nicer and nicer, and I got them professionally done. One being like, you know, a farm stand a mile ahead, slow for flowers, just like being really intentional. And I drove by, everyone who worked for me like hated me for this, and my partner Matt, because I would be like, okay, now it's the time of year where we're going to put up the signs again, because we would often take them down in the winter. And I'd be like, I need two people standing on the road holding the sign, so when I drive by, I can call you and say, nope, it needs to be angled 45 degrees differently. And they're like, I'm going to kill you. And these were like scary, busy roads too. And I was like, that eucalyptus tree is hiding the shade. You know, the shade is on the sign. You need to move it 10 feet forward, take it out. And they're like, going to kill me. But it worked. Like, I drove by until I made sure that the signs had the right language and didn't have too many words, made sure you could read them when driving by, you know, 50 miles an hour or whatever, and gave you enough time to slow down and stop at the stand. So anyways, it's just like all these tiny things that I could see them working over the years. And this is what allowed me to go from like 10,000 in sales to 40,000 to 60 to like 125 grand in sales with the farm stand, which I'm so proud of, because it took time, and it, you know, is a little bit of location and luck, but a lot of perseverance. And
the takeaway for everyone is how deliberate you were in continuously optimizing to drive traffic to the stand, as well as maximizing the profitability of it. And do you remember, of the people who were repeat customers, how often does someone come by to buy a $30 bouquet? I know it's an affluent place, but you know, it's still $30 for a bouquet, right?
Totally. I usually once a week or like once every 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's sort of a guess of what I'm trying to remember. Yeah,
but it's frequent. It's not like they're stopping by once a month, right? They're clearly indulging, we'll call it, right, in a really nicely put together bouquet for their house, right?
Yeah. I would sometimes try to do like, I was going to say give back to my locals. That sounds more charitable than it was. I mean, we can talk about other things that I have done in my business to be charitable, which, because I found it important as I started trying to sell the highest value stuff, I tried to also make sure that I was like partnering up with the nonprofits I wanted to and giving away flowers to the populations I cared about in town, all that. But the people driving by with the $7 lattes, like, yeah, I was going to charge them $30 for a bouquet. So sometimes on the slowest days of the week, like Tuesday or Wednesday, usually I would try to do like a locals deal. So maybe I would sometimes do like 2-for-1 ranunculus or something. And I still wasn't, you know, I don't think everyone needs to ever lower their prices or ever do sales. I think it does work at a lot of farmers markets and stuff. So I'm all for it if it's working and you're not like racing to the bottom. But I would sometimes, usually I would do, rather than reduce the price, I would do a 2-for-1, and I might do like 2 bunches of ranunculus for the price of one, or the second one half off. And those bunches might be a little smaller than what I was normally selling. Like, you can definitely adjust your bunch size or your bouquet size if you're selling retail. There's no rules around that, you know? So, but I would try to give them something extra to encourage sales midweek. And I would also sometimes, you know what, I would schedule my CSA pickups for one of the slowest days of the week at the farm stand so that there wasn't competition for too much traffic around the stand. And then also, if I had single variety bunches, which I didn't usually sell that much at the farm stand, we can talk about pricing too, because that's super important, but I would have like my CSA pickup day on a Tuesday or Wednesday. And on that day, I would also have like sort of additional flowers that they could buy well at the stand.
I know that there are people who sell single bunches and are able to upsell a little bit more because people like to put them together. But it's interesting that you also said that you put your CSA pickup at the farm stand. How did you price your CSA bouquets relative to farm stand? Like, did the CSA members get a better deal?
Yeah. So my CSA, over the years, the CSA that really was the most successful for me was my peony CSA. And that's specifically because no one else was really growing peonies in Sonoma County. And so it's a little bit too warm to grow them as successfully as you do in colder climates. It's just on the border. So I did this peony CSA because no one else was doing it. It was novel where I was. I don't think you could get away with that in Oregon because like there's peonies everywhere. Hopefully soon there will be peonies everywhere, but so it was novel, and I tried to make it sort of a luxury experience. And those bouquets were priced at like usually $45 or $49, so it was kind of a elevated thing. But I made them special, and because the peony CSA was only 4 weeks, I like wrapped the bouquets extra special with like tissue paper and brown paper, and I'm, you know, they were bigger, but I was still using the markup, maybe more like a 2.5x markup or something like that. But, and I, you know, I've done all sorts of CSAs, but that's the one I stuck with. And that's the one that, you know, the past few years when I did it, I had like 100 subscribers, and it was just a really neat and tidy, awesome, efficient CSA. And I think a lot of people are struggling with to keep CSAs going, even though they're not that full. And I think people need to start cutting out their CSAs if they're struggling to get sales every year, because I think the benefits of like the upfront cash and the crop planning, I think those benefits aren't as great as people assume they are if you only have a few subscribers. But yeah, our pricing, we really tried at the farm stand to not sell. We stopped selling single variety bunches, and we stopped selling like $15 items, because if someone was just driving by and just stopping and you had a $30 bouquet or a $15 bunch of ranunculus, they probably would buy the $15 bunch of ranunculus. I wanted every customer to spend a little bit more money with me. If I only had 10 or 20 people stopping a day, I needed them to have a certain minimum spend in order for me to meet my sales goals. So I tried to bump that up into that higher priced item. And again, like if someone wanted to stop and just enjoy the flowers and not buy anything, that's totally fine. Before I started growing flowers, I would have never spent money on myself like this. So I totally understand that not everyone has $30 to spend on themselves or wants to. So, but there's other ways that I feel like I can contribute to the world rather than having a $15 thing for sale. You know what I mean? I don't feel bad about it anymore. But so I really tried to not have low ticket items so that people, if they were going to spend money, they were going to spend $30. And then I tried to have a larger bouquet, like a $45 bouquet available, usually at least on weekends, not always during the week, but to do this like price anchoring, price sandwich thing. So it made the $30 bouquet seem cheaper. Even if it was just one bucket that had two $45 large bouquets in it, it made the $35 bouquets look cheaper. And even if those two $45 bouquets didn't sell, I made more money just by having them there. And so if I had had $15 bunches and $30 bouquets, the $30 would seem more expensive to people. So it's sort of this like sales psychology trick that really worked.
Yeah, I love price anchoring. I think people need to really learn about it, especially like when you're pricing at a market, because if two price points are too far off, people are going to go with the lower price point, right? So another way to have done it, I think, is price the ranunculus bunches at like $25. So the $30 bunches seem like such a better deal, right? Because there's a little bit more variety. This was awesome talking about your farm stand. One last question about the farm stand.
Yeah.
Since you've worked with so many people, and I'm sure a lot of the farmers who you work with have farm stands, what's like one common mistake that you see people committing in that regard?
With farm stands in particular. Yeah, I love teaching about farm stands. And I used to have a little online course that was just a video, a farm stand course. But I made that no longer available on my site, and I'm kind of redoing it into an expanded farm stand course, because I think I want people to do better with their farm stands, because I think it provides you with so much more flexibility to live your life than so many other sales outlets. So stay tuned for that. I'll have a farm stand course available soon, but I also love giving out free information, so I'm trying to write more about it. But one big mistake is honestly not being ambitious enough with your sales goal. Just being like, we're too rural, or people don't spend money on flowers where I am, or people haven't shown much interest in my farm stand yet, so how will they ever? But no, I think people need to be more ambitious with how much, and set their sights higher, and then work backwards to make a plan to get there, because you can do it. Sure, there are some locations where a farm stand is never going to be highly, highly profitable, or rather like have crazy sales. But for most people, with some like diligence and some time over the years, you can do it. And I eventually, this is the other thing I want to like teach about in this little course, because I haven't shared about it that much, is that I was able to sell my farm stand business. I moved away and I didn't sell B-Side Farm because like I wanted to keep that. And also, what is that? I'm in a new market. It doesn't have much value, you know, but I sold the portion of my business that was the farm stand. So essentially like the email list, the sales model, the customers, the physical stuff we had built there, and the systems and the methods and the name. So I was able to, it allowed me to bring in some money last year with monthly payments from the new owner, a percentage of their sales, and helped me get started on my new farm just by, you know, those little payments. So it was pretty awesome and not something I've heard talked about a lot. I don't think we see a lot of flower farm businesses being sold. So it was pretty cool and pretty.
Yeah. Usually you just hear the infrastructure where the farm is growing stuff being sold, but not the farm stand. So that's really unique and awesome.
Yeah, totally. And I was so proud of it, and not only just proud of it, but like, I loved it so much. I loved my farm stand, and I talk about money so much, but mostly just because I love farming and I want to be able to keep farming, and to do that, we need to make money. So that's why I focus on money so much. But I loved like the feeling of the farm stand. I did love the community that got built up around it. I loved providing a bright spot in people's day, whether or not they were buying flowers. And so I knew it was such a great model that I had happened upon and that I had built up, that I wanted someone else to benefit from that. I didn't want the customers to have nowhere to go. And I wanted to like hand this over to another farmer so that they could thrive with it and so that they could do better in their business. And so the fact that it worked out is just so, so wonderful. And the customers are happy, the farmer's happy. It's just like, we're all happy, you know?